Get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the snake pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Thank you. It's brought to you by
Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views.
So we're doing a special Monday edition because I had a pretty rough little Saturday. So we'll backtrack a little bit. The first Dallas Dogger function that we ever did here at the radio station, it was 9 years ago-ish. And this past May, I do believe, 9 years ago. And we had a big adoption. And Dallas Dogger, for those who don't know, is the dog rescue that we've supported up here and tried to make everybody aware of. And in conjunction with the big auction that we had and going to Lajitas and all that, we had dogs to be adopted out at the site. And I believe it was at Oak Highlands Brewery, if I remember correctly, down in Lake Highlands. It's where the event was. Mm-hmm. And of course, my wife was there and a couple of my buddies from Lake Highlands were there. And one of my friends that I grew up with in Arlington was there. And he goes, dude, you're getting ready to get a dog. I'm like, what? And he's like, turn around. And I see my wife holding this puppy that was about the size of her hand. I was like, oh, no. Oh, God.
Love at first sight.
And, you know, you go to those things and you knock back a couple of beers and it's just super emotional and all that. And so it turns out that yes, in fact, we were going to get that dog. And I want to say at the time we had two dogs. So going back to 2000, since I know this is a weird point of reference for time, but since 9/11, we've always had two dogs. And the reason I know that is because we had one dog and there was a huge 9/11 fundraiser. And somehow it, of course, coincided with the dog adoption. It was down on Lower Greenville. Dave, you may have been there. And we ended up getting our Basset Hound, Lola, at this 9/11 fundraiser. And from that moment on, for 24 years, we have always had at least two dogs. And for the majority of those 24, 25 years, we've had three. And we've taken in all sorts, whether it's, you know, adoptions at fundraisers. Three of our dogs were straight from the street. They wandered into our neighborhood and we ended up taking them in and they became our dogs. So Frankie, this dog that we got from Dallas Dogger 9 years ago, they found her and her mom and I think maybe two of her siblings underneath a house in South Dallas. And, you know, they were just kind of hiding out and they were, you know, mom and her little puppies and all that. And Dogger took him in and that's where we found Frankie. So we took Frankie in when she was really small. And yeah, we had two other dogs at the time. And so it was kind of a mess trying to, and we had two kids that were pretty hectic at the time, but it was what it was. It was fine. And she was super sweet and she was, you know, always like the scared dog but she grew and became like the biggest, tallest dog we'd had. She was like a total mutt, but we did the DNA test because we're total suckers for that type of thing. Whatever you can spend money on a dog that doesn't make sense, we'll do it. Which, DJ, it sounds like you're in the same boat.
I've held firm on the DNA testing because I don't care. But yes, anything else, I'm just walking dollar signs. Just
clothing,
do
collars, leashes, harnesses.
Beds,
oh my God.
Toys,
beds.
So many beds.
Toys, indoor beds, outdoor beds, crates. Everything that you could possibly buy, we have bought. We have switched foods on our dog, or food. We've switched their food maybe 20 different times, I feel like, through the years, just one likes this, one doesn't like that. So Frankie was just kind of thrown into the firestorm, if you will, of our household 9 years ago, and she was great. And so she was 9 years old, and a couple of weeks ago, she was acting really lethargic at home. And if you've ever had a dog before, you know that that's not uncommon. They may have a little bit of a tummy issue. And so you wait it out a little bit. And then if it continues, then you take him to the vet. Well, it went on for a couple of days where I noticed on her walks, she was really, really slow. And for a 9-year-old dog, oh, by the way, she was a Manchester Terrier. That's what we determined she was. This very tall, regal, British-y sounding giant black dog.
Hello!
Yes. So wait, where was I? I backtracked and then I lost.
You
took it on a walk.
Yeah, you took her on a walk. And she was lagging behind.
Yeah. So she's lagging behind and she wasn't eating. And, you know, when they're not eating, that's a sure sign of something. And so, Julie scheduled an appointment to take her in and it was during our show. And so I got a phone call or a text during the break, like, you got to call me. I'm like, oh God. So I knew it wasn't good news. And so they couldn't find anything wrong with her per se. And so they wanted to run a couple of tests and they did an x-ray and they did some other blood test. And long story short, they found cancer.
What day was this again?
This is 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Not long ago at all. And I'm like, oh my God. And so they basically told us there's nothing we can do. It was in her blood, in her lungs. And, you know, she's just super uncomfortable and that's why she wasn't eating and that's why she was really slow on her walks and all that. And she was super active, like crazy active, running around, spinning around, doing all the fun dog stuff. So it was a gut punch for sure. And they told us that, you know, she could live 6 months though. You just don't know. And she could be fine and you never know that the cancer had metastasized and spread to a point where it's going to make her life miserable. Well, fast forward to last week I said bye to everybody and said bye to the dogs on that Saturday last week to go out to California. And I didn't think for a second that was going to be the last time I saw her, but I did give her a big hug and, you know, just in case. Mm-hmm. And so then on Wednesday of last week, I get the note that, man, it's not great. And what we were doing in the meantime was instead of taking her on like a big long walk like I would do in the mornings and Julie would do in the afternoons, we were taking our other dog, Blue, on longer walks and taking her just around the block. And that's all she could take because she would start breathing heavy and it would be awful. And they were like, don't get her excited. Don't let her play and she didn't want to because she was not feeling well. But they're like, if she does start losing her breath, she could go. So we're keeping these walks really, really short, you know, and feeding her whatever she would eat. Anything. If she would eat pancakes, we're feeding it to her. Breakfast sausage, hamburger, anything. She just wouldn't eat though. And so on Wednesday, she's like, it's getting worse. She's getting way, way short of breath. And I'm like, man. And on Thursday, she's like, she's not going to make it.
Wow.
She's like, can you come home? I'm like, this is like our biggest week of the year. I don't know what to do. And so we were all scheduled to come back on Saturday at noon. And so on Friday, I reached out to Lindsay, who is our account executive here, who handles American Airlines. And American Airlines, now a partner. And we were looking for flights to get me back because we were having the conversation on Friday. I told her, I'm like, look, if you need to do this, if you feel it's right, then it's right. And you can't wait on me. Don't wait on me. And she's like, I can't do that, you know, and she's hanging on and she ate a little bit and she got up and she peed. And I'm like, but if she's in pain and this is awful and shortness of breath and not living, you know, living in pain, that's the thing that you wrestle with the most when you have a dog like that. I don't want her to be in any pain whatsoever. And it was obvious she was. And so we decided that we would try and wait. And so found a flight on Saturday. We were flying out of Santa Barbara, found a flight where I could leave out of Burbank, which is the other direction. So we're in Ventura staying there for camp. Santa Barbara's to the north. Burbank is to the south. Not equidistant. Santa Barbara's probably 20 minutes closer. And found a 7 a.m. flight that would get me home by noon instead of getting home at 5, which you guys didn't get until 6.
6:30, yeah.
Yeah.
Like home after 7.
Okay, yeah. So that would not have worked at all. for me. And so we got it squared away, and then I'm trying to figure out, okay, if I have this 7 a.m. flight, do I trust an Uber to pick me up at 5 in the morning to take me down there? And Bob, which I cannot thank you enough, dude.
Noted dog guy.
You volunteered. You're like, look, I'll take you. Don't even sweat it. Because I had to get to the airport. I had to get home. And so Bob wakes up at 4:45 like a freaking champ and meets me out there in the parking lot at 5 a.m. And away we went and got there to the Burbank airport right at 6 o'clock.
Right at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, right at 6 o'clock. And the flight was on time at 7 o'clock. And so I get home and land. And as we land, she texts me and she goes, where are you? I'm like, I'm here. I'm at the airport. We landed. I'll be there in 45 minutes at DFW. And she's like, oh my God, she's dying. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Please just let me get there. Long story short, the pilot couldn't find a gate. And so we sat there on the runway for another 15, 20 minutes. And I'm getting texts from my kids like, where are you? I'm like, I can't do anything. Can you ask the pilot? I'm like, no, I can't do any of these things. So I get in my Uber at the airport and.
Did you go straight to the vet?
She was in the closet, at our house. So when dogs get, if you've had dogs before and they get older, they get sick, they go to a safe place. And typically that's a small confined area, whether it's, if they are comfortable in a crate or a closet. We've had multiple dogs go into closets when they get really sick. And so that's where she was. And they were like, she hadn't moved all day, like nothing. And her breath is super short. I'm like, oh my God. So I haul ass home and get to the house and I run into our bedroom and, kids are there. Julie's there in the closet and they're just, you know, around her and, you know, she's not moving. And I wouldn't say anything. I kind of look over the top of their shoulders and I see her and I'm like, hey, Frankie. And she jumped up and like literally, like first time she'd moved all day, like jumped up. And was, you know, standing there, like staring at me and you know, lick me and all that. And then right back down. And I spent probably an hour and a half with her. And then me and my oldest went to the hospital that's open on Saturdays and, you know, took her to assist her in her journey over the Rainbow Bridge. But it was, I'm glad that they waited because she definitely was waiting on me. Like that was a sign that.
Dang.
Yeah. She was definitely waiting because she was about to go. And I don't know how much longer. Like I don't think she would have made it to 7. But she was so excited there for just the briefest of moments. But I will say this, and I've said this every time we've had to do this, it's the worst thing in the world, no question about it. But if you just put in perspective the amount of time that you did spend with them and the time that you gave them, because as we've domesticated these animals over time, you know, a lot of them don't have a good shot at anything decent in their lives. And so all you want to give them is a shot at a decent life and a decent home. And if you look at it that way, you gave them everything that you possibly could in X amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
The end sucks, but that middle part leading up to the end is always awesome. It's always a fun journey and funny and they're hilarious and they're huge parts of your family and all that. And so, I'd go through it a dozen more times, the ending, just to experience everything that goes along with it. So it's a big yay boo situation, but it was, hell on wheels there for about 48 hours. But everything worked out the way it should have outside of, you know, the finality of her death. Everything worked out, getting back home, seeing her, getting to spend time with her, you know, even though she was just laying there. She knew I was there.
You know, but that's what they always say in obituaries and eulogies, that they died surrounded by loved ones. And that's the most important thing, is that they feel that.
Yes, right.
How did the other dogs handle it?
So, it's the other thing. So, she came into a situation with Mabel, who we lost Mabel like a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now, October of 23. And so now Blue, who came into both this sisterhood with these two girls, he's now, and that they taught him kind of how to be a dog, because he was wild ass and off the straight off the street, and we took him off the street and cleaned him up and took him in.
Squats like a girl.
Yeah, he squats. Yeah. So he is always getting boosters. He's just so woke. It's unbelievable. But yeah, he's having he's the one that we're worried about, because this is the only life he's known. And he's super sad. Like, he walks around the house and peeking around corners and runs out in the yard and looks around. I mean, it's terrible. That's the worst part about it. We're going to be okay, but we got to get old Blue through this. So,
well, shout out to Frankie.
Shout out, Frankie. She's in. We're putting her in.